Hey everyone, welcome back to the sports podcast. I'm your host for today, Justin Roman. And guys, I hope you guys are having a fine afternoon. I know I am. You know, guys, NFL free agency, 1 month away. You know, can't wait until the draft, which is 2 months away. You know. So, guys, anyways, let's just get into talking sports. Some guys, I want to talk about the Giants really quick. I'm just gonna give you guys the five offensive breakout candidates for 2021 that will play for the Giants next season. So, okay, it's a gross understatement to say the Giants offense is in need of some firepower. The Giants offense in 2020 was one of the worst in the league. Though he was named the most improved player. Starting quarterback Daniel Jones regressed in just about every category. And despite the team improving its turnover differential by plus 17 from 2019, the Giants had just one additional win. The offensive woes that continue to plague this team should not be set aside and forgotten. But 2020 also felt like a tipping point. As bad as the offense played for much of the year, they ended the season in the hunt for the playoffs. This team is, don't get me wrong, the Giants are trending upward. I see it myself. And hope and expectation will occupy fans until they see the Giants take the field in 2021. Now the question is, who will be the main drivers for this? The staples of the Giants offense, like Daniel Jones, veteran wide receiver Sterling Shepard, and Pro Bowl tight end Evan Engram will no doubt make up the foundation of Jason Garrett's offense. But the offense with those players alone proved to be ineffective, to say the least. What's needed are players that can step up and push this offense to a higher standard. All we needed, if the Giants want to become a successful contender. So anyways, guys, I'm just gonna name out the five players that will be breakout stars for the Giants in 2021. For the offense. Now, obviously the man I'm going to talk about, he didn't have a breakout season. Even when everyone expected him to have a breakout season. I think he will have a breakout season in 2021, and that's wide receiver Darius Slayton. Here's why. After a productive rookie season, Slayton entered the 2020 season with high expectations. But for some reason, he did not become the standout receiver the team needed him to be. It's not as though Slayton had an awful year. He led the team for the second straight season in yards with 755, which puts him in the company of elite receivers of the Giants' past. His 2020 total was just 11 yards, more than his total in 2019, though it was spread out through two more games played. Slayton was again second on the team in targets, but only had two additional receptions in 2020 with 50. He was third on the team in receptions. of concern, he was down in touchdowns. He only had three touchdowns in 2020. In 2019, he had 8. And up in drops, he dropped 6 completed passes this year. Last year, he only had 2 incomplete passes. The offense across the board was down in productivity in 2020. The Giants in 2020 passed for 3,000 yards, whereas the team threw for 3,000 the year before. As the second most targeted player, Darius Slayton would have had more opportunities to shine had the Giants been able to throw the ball better. But Slayton's best attribute coming into the season was his ability to haul in touchdowns. And though he's now led the team back-to-back seasons in receiving yards, it's not a good sign at how the totals are. Odell Beckham Jr. was the last Giants receiver to lead the team in consecutive seasons, but he did it with nearly double the amount of yards. Beckham led in 2015 with 1,450 yards, and again in 2016 with 1,367 yards. What may be more troubling for this team is that in the 3 of the past 5 seasons, the Giants' leading receiver had fewer than 1,000 yards. While Slayton may not return to be the next OBJ, it doesn't mean he can't help the team. The other receiver to lead the Giants without breaking 1,000 yards was Sterling Shepard, who, when healthy, is one of the more dangerous slot receivers in the game. And if the Giants either draft or obtain a true number one receiver, expectations for Darius Slayton won't remain unrealistic, which should allow him to flourish. Another player that I think will be a breakout star, and we just signed this guy from the 49ers. I think he will be a breakout star, and that is Dante Pettis. I think he's going to be a breakout star, and here's why. Elsewhere in the receiving corps, Dante Pettis presents an interesting case. Though Pettis only played in 2 games with the Giants in 2020, he made his presence known in both, something one would expect from a big-time playmaker. In his 2 games, he caught 4 passes on 5 targets for 76 yards and 1 touchdown. Not a bad way to get your coach's attention. What's more, 3 of his 4 receptions gamered first downs, which is an arena the Giants desperately need help in. And even more impressive, the average quarterback rating when Dante Pettis is targeted is 158.3. Though that average is abide by his limited presence. It's telling that number is high. When he's on the field, he makes his quarterback better, this making the team better. Pettis was on the field for the Giants for only 29 offensive plays, 5 of which he was targeted, but one of those plays in particular showed his potential. With under a minute to play in the first half, Daniel Jones completed a deep ball over the middle to Pettis. Who hauled it in for a 33-yard touchdown. The deep ball is something no defenses feared when playing the Giants. Daniel Jones was 32nd in the league for the longest pass, which was 53 yards. And he was also 31st in the league in adjusted net yards per pass attempt, which was 4.92. The hope is that Pettis, who stands at 6'1", is no taller than Slayton, can present an additional weapon to open up the field for Daniel Jones. The worthy for Pettis stems from his time in San Francisco. After a solid rookie campaign in 2018 with the 49ers, his numbers plummeted in 2019, the only year on record he wasn't placed on IR. And in 5 games with the 49ers in 2020, a team decimated by injuries to their offense, he only had 1 target to his credit. But the Giants saw something in him. And in his limited playing time for New York, Dante Pettis showed why he should be included in the offensive game plan going forward. Guys, another player, the third player that I have having a breakout season, I also have this man winning Comeback Player of the Year. I have Saquon Barkley breaking out next season. You know, look, as mentioned, some of these should be no-brainers. And while many people, for good reason, have criticized Dave Gettleman for drafting a running back with the 2nd overall pick, you know, in 2018, everyone should be excited for Saquon Barkley to return to the field. Barkley is a superstar, there's no question. He's a generational talent. Not only does he make plays around him better, but his presence alone forces opposing teams to adjust their defenses. And while Wayne Gallman did a fantastic job filling in as the starter, Barkley's absence provided how vital he is to the Giants offense. Saquon Barkley's first year with the Giants was electric, giving him the rightful title to Offensive Rookie of the Year. He had 2,000 yards from scrimmage and 15 touchdowns, and he helped bring the Giants offense to 17th overall in 2018, up from 21st overall back in 2017. Unfortunately for Barkley, his rookie season was the only time in 3 years he played all 16 games. No one can ever question how important it is for him to be on the field. And there are a few interesting stats to prove it. The Giants rushed for 1,650 yards in total back in 2018. As mentioned before, bumping the offense up to 17th overall in the league, Barkley played 16 games that season. In 2019, the Giants rushed for more yards. They had a total of 1,685 rushing yards in total. But their offense dropped to 23rd in the league. Barkley played 13 games that season. And in 2020, the Giants only rushed for 1,768 yards in total. Their highest total since 2012 was 1,862 total rushing yards. But their offense was 31st in the league. The worst it's been since Barkley was drafted. He only played 2 full games last season. Even though the Giants have managed to rush for more total yards in Barkley's absence, the offense itself just suffered. The team will be better off with him in the lineup. Yes, I understand it's really worrying that he suffered leg injuries two of his 3 seasons. His latest being a torn ACL. In a way, though, this should be a lesson the Giants should learn from. Barkley has been a complete workhorse on a bad team with an atrocious offensive line. He's had no help on the outside from his receivers, and his quarterback is not a threat. Teams know he's going to get the ball, so they plan accordingly. If the Giants were to adopt a similar system that the Cleveland Browns have, it would provide Barkley with help and longevity, especially after the season Wayne Gallman had. The Giants would be foolish to allow a capable runner to walk. All I'm saying is this. If anyone can put in the work needed to come back from a severe injury, it's Saquon Barkley. Regardless of the help the Giants provide for him, Barkley is slated to have a big return season. He's hungry. Defenders beware. That's all I gotta say. So guys, my fourth player that I think will break out this season. There isn't a possibility that this man plays this season. He is a cut candidate. He did opt out for this season. That's Nate Solder. Here's why. There is perhaps one player with more to prove than Saquon Barkley in his return to the Giants offense. And that's obviously Nate Solder. Solder was signed in 2018, a 4-year, $62 million contract. The 32-year-old veteran is currently the sixth highest paid lineman in the NFL. But the Giants have seen little to nothing in their return on investment. Solder was sorely missed in 2020. Like I said, him opting out forced Andrew Thomas to play the most important position on the offensive line. And while Thomas played hurt, he got better as the season went on and showed more potential than the bust who was Ereck Flowers. He still had, obviously, Andrew Thomas, he still has ways to go. In PFF's final season rankings, the Giants offensive line was rated the 31st in the league. Thomas allowed 14 more pressures than any other left tackle and led the league in sacks allowed with 10. On the right side, presumably where Thomas would have started had Solder played left tackle, Cam Fleming allowed the 6th most pressures in the league. The offensive line has nowhere to go but up with Nate Solder coming back. And there's reason to believe that he'll come back strong. During his tenure with the Patriots, Solder went down with an injury in 2015, forcing him to miss 12 games. He ended that season with a PFF overall rating of 70. But when he came back in 2016, well-rested and ready to play, PFF rated him 85.8, which was the highest of his career. And since he was rated only 64.9, which was the lowest of his career, in his last season when he played for the Giants, perhaps some time off will do him well, hopefully. He certainly earned it. Solder played 2,000 offensive snaps across the 2018 and 19 season. Andrew Thomas played fewer than 1,000 snaps in his first season. Nate Solder is a former first rounder, a two-time Super Bowl champion, and has nearly a decade of experience playing one of the most important positions on the football field. Expect the offensive line to improve with him back in the locker room, hopefully. And guys, my last and final player that I think will improve next season. No, it's not Evan Engram. No, it's not Levine Toilolo. But let's say Caden Smith. Yes, Caden Smith is my fifth player that I have improving for the Giants offense. Here's why. Despite Evan Engram's status as a Pro Bowl tight end, the Giants will be wise to look for or develop an additional weapon at tight end. Caden Smith, to me, should help with the latter. You know, at that is help they need. And that is help they need. Engram ended his Pro Bowl year with a catch percentage of 57.8, which was his second lowest across his 4-year career. Worse, he dropped 11 passes and was responsible for 6 interceptions. Quarterbacks averaged a rating of just 55.4 when targeting Engram. Now the question is, you guys are probably gonna ask me the most basic question. Justin, how can Caden Smith help? Well, let's start by showing his numbers in those same categories. Across 15 games played, Smith had a catch percentage of 85.7 in 2020. which was the highest among the entire team. He didn't have a single drop to his credit, and quarterbacks averaged a rating of 88.9 when Caden Smith was their target. As good as these numbers are, they are helped by the quantity with which Smith plays. Despite playing in 6 more games in 2020 than his rookie campaign back in 2019, Caden Smith had fewer targets, he also had fewer yards, and fewer touchdowns. And as great as it is that the quarterback average for targeting Caden Smith is 88.9, that too was down from the prior year, in which quarterbacks averaged 114. Evan Ingram, his presence seemed to cut into Caden Smith's production. Ingram was hurt for half of 2019, played in just 8 games. And in those games, Smith stepped up in the passing game, which, as we've learned, was better in 2019 than it was in 2020. But there should be enough space for both of them on this offense. Evan Ingram's legend only continues to grow with his first Pro Bowl selection, which means he's more likely to face tougher coverage. And since there's a greater chance of Ingram dropping the ball or causing an interception, Caden Smith should make for a nice check down target. Caden Smith, to me, may have taken a backseat in the passing game during 2020, but expect him to be more prevalent in 2021. So guys, those are my five offensive breakout candidates for 2021 for the New York Giants. So guys, yeah, let me know if you guys agree with those five selections, or guys, just let me know if there's other players besides the ones I just named out that will be breakout stars. Hey guys, let's talk about the Dallas Cowboys. So guys, the Dallas Cowboys, they need, guys, I'm gonna be nice today to Cowboys fans. I'm gonna nicely explain the three things that this crappy organization needs to do here's the three things the Cowboys must do if they somehow fail to sign Dak to a long-term extension. So look, the Dallas Cowboys' top priority this offseason should be trying to resign their starting quarterback, Dak Prescott. However, the organization must be prepared for the possibility that the two sides might not reach a deal for a long-term extension, and that another franchise tag might not be the ideal move either. If the Cowboys are not able to bring Dak, if the Cowboys are not able to bring back Prescott, they will be forced into a bad situation without a clear answer for the most important position in football. Nevertheless, the team should prepare a contingency plan just in case they are not able to bring back their starting signal caller. This plan never actually has to be executed. However, Dallas must make sure to do these three things if they somehow fail to resign Prescott in order to avoid catastrophic next season. So the first thing the Cowboys obviously have to do, they need to resign Andy Dalton. Here's why. Last offseason, the Cowboys decided to sign veteran quarterback Andy Dalton to a one-year deal, during the heat of contract negotiations with Prescott. The move was taken by some as a possible indication that Dallas might not be able to reach a deal with their starting quarterback. That speculation was put to rest, at least temporarily. When Prescott signed a franchise tag offer from the organization, which was worth over $30 million, the move relegated the former Cincinnati Bengals to the role of the backup quarterback. At least that was the plan. Then the team's starting signal caller went down with a gruesome season-ending ankle injury in the team's Week 5 matchup against the Giants. The veteran backup was then quickly forced into action against the Giants, where he managed to lead an improbable fourth quarter comeback to get Dallas its second win of the year. The three-time Pro Bowler passer played admirably. He played okay in his 9 starts for the organization in a year that was plagued with significant injuries. Dalton finished the season with 14 passing touchdowns and 8 interceptions and helped lead the struggling Cowboys to a 4-5 record in his starts. The 10th-year passer played some of his best football towards the end of the year, albeit against less than stellar competition. Over the last 4 games of the season, Dalton led the team to a 3-1 record while tossing 7 touchdowns and only 2 interceptions. The Dallas Cowboys would be wise to bring Andy Dalton if they can't reach a deal with Dak. The 33-year-old is already at least somewhat familiar with both the offensive system and the personnel and played admirably good, or okay, you could say, in a tough situation last season. So obviously the second thing the Cowboys need to do, they obviously need to consider trading up and drafting a quarterback. You know, most fans of America's team realize that the Cowboys currently have a plethora of pressing needs that it needs to address this offseason. Currently, that list is heavily skewed towards the defense side of the ball. However, if the organization fails to bring Prescott, calculus will be dramatically altered. The quarterback position is arguably the most important position in the sport and is seemingly getting more important every year. Without a competent signal caller, most teams can kiss their chances of making the playoffs goodbye. Even if the Cowboys bring in a veteran quarterback like Andy Dalton, like I suggested in the previous slide, the team will still need to figure a long-term solution for the position. Andy Dalton is 33 years old and would not provide Dallas with anything near the level of play it needs to compete for a Super Bowl. This means that the Cowboys might have to get aggressive in this year's draft in order to find its future signal caller. The organization currently has the 10th overall pick in the upcoming NFL draft in a year with an unusually strong quarterback class. However, this team will be picking behind several teams, possibly up to 7, that could use an upgrade at the quarterback position. This fact might require Dallas to trade up, possibly with the Miami Dolphins or the Cincinnati Bengals, to nab one of the top signal callers of this draft. If this team wants to stay put with the 10th overall pick, it could hope that either North Dakota State Trey Lance or Ohio State quarterback Justin Fields inexplicably falls to them. However, the wiser move for Dallas would be to try and move up in the draft to guarantee itself one of these highly rated prospects. The Cowboys should watch these top quarterback prospects closely in the lead up to the 2021 draft. If the team fails to bring back Prescott, they should strongly consider moving up in the draft to guarantee itself a chance to potentially nab its quarterback of the future. And the last and final thing the Cowboys need to do is acquire good free agents to help their secondary. You know, the Cowboys were, I think they were one of only seven teams in 2022 to allow opposing quarterbacks to have a passer rating over 100. This team has also managed to only nab 17 interceptions over the past two seasons. Needless to say, this team is in desperate need of help in its secondary. If the Cowboys somehow re-sign Prescott, it can use its top draft pick to address this need by selecting either Alabama cornerback Patrick Surtain II or Virginia Tech cornerback Caleb Farley. However, if the organization fails to bring back its starting quarterback, their most pressing need would instantly become finding the quarterback of the future. The Cowboys will need help on the defensive side of the ball regardless of what it decides to do with Prescott. They would be wise to use most of their draft picks to address it in either case. However, one of the only upsides to not bringing their starting signal caller back would be the money it frees up for Dallas in its cap space. The organization is currently projected to have roughly $20 million in cap space heading into 2021. Most of that money would inevitably be used to bring back Prescott if the two sides can somehow reach a long-term deal. However, that money could be used to address the team's other needs if they fail to bring back their starting quarterback. The Cowboys could also significantly add their cap space by being really creative with some of their players exiting contracts. This money can and should be used to pursue top-tier defensive free agents like safety Anthony Harris from the Vikings or cornerback Richard Sherman from the 49ers. And possibly even multiple-time Defensive Player of the Year defensive end J.J. Watt from the Texans. The freed-up cap space would also give Dallas more flexibility to bring back some of its own free agents like cornerback Chidobe Awuzie and edge rusher Aldon Smith. So all I'm saying is this. The downsides of not bringing back Dak probably outweigh the potential benefits. However, one of those benefits would certainly be allowing America's team to be more aggressive in both free agency and the draft. The Cowboys should exhaust all of their options to try and bring back Dak Prescott, but the organization should be prepared for the worst, even if it expects the best. What I just explained, is what I have been talking about for weeks. The Cowboys, if they somehow sign Dak to a long term, they need to fix some things. They need to fix that offensive line. They need to fix that defensive secondary. If they can get those things, the things I just explained, if the Cowboys somehow get those things done, which I hope they don't because I hate them, they can somehow... an option of winning this crappy division. I still don't have the Cowboys winning this division. I still either have the Giants or Washington winning it. But if Dallas can somehow get those pieces I was just talking about, they can somehow get into the playoffs. I don't expect it to happen, but it could. If they don't, then they're gonna end up sucking, which I would love it a lot because I don't like them. So that's all I'm saying. Hey guys, let's talk about the Philadelphia Eagles. So guys, there's a report on CBS Sports by Jason LaConfora. Like him a lot. He's a writer for Empire States of Football. He is a big Giants fan. Shout out to Jason. And guys, Jason, today, two hours ago, he was talking about the Eagles. He said, quote unquote, desperate for a reset. Eagles dealing Carson Wentz to Colts was addition by subtraction. So guys, obviously the former franchise quarterback had worn out his welcome in Philly. Okay, so what? So obviously the Eagles, the Eagles are ready to hit that reset button and get rid of everything. So what does it mean by the Eagles dealing Carson Wentz was an addition by subtraction? Well, obviously the Eagles, they lost a talented quarterback. They didn't give Carson Wentz any talent. The Eagles had no good receivers. You know, their offensive line was a mess, always hurt. You know, Miles Sanders, he did okay. But other than that, what is there else to say? Here's my thoughts on this. Another quarterback trade, born of desperation, was completed unofficially well before the start of the NFL's league year. And while not entirely similar to the Matthew Stafford and Jared Goff transaction, Carson Wentz's departure for Indianapolis has many of the same strange undertones and plenty of risk to go around. This move was as much about a bad contract and significant cap hit as anything else like the Jared Goff and Matthew Stafford trade. And while it doesn't involve two quarterbacks or nearly as much draft pick compensation as the Lions-Rams swap, it was born of the same organs and has more in common than the Colts or Eagles would like. It involves a recent top two overall pick playing the most important position in all of professional team sports, who had quickly become a sunk cost and cash and cap albatross for the team who selected him, who found themselves in the untenable position of trying to get some sort of ample compensation to offset all that had already been invested in him. You know, that's hardly a position of strength. In the case of the Rams, it wasn't personal between the quarterback and the coach. Just that Sean McVay had done all of his best quarterback whispering already and gone as far as he felt he could go with Jared Goff in terms of catering the offense and play calling and everything else to his strengths. It had run its course, fatigued. And the cold reality is that Jared Goff had lost his job to previously unheard of John Wolford. Not because of his hand injury, but because of performance. McVay felt like Wolford's ability to run around outside the pocket could unlock more of the offense than what Jared Goff could provide. And no amount of salary cap hit was going to change that. You know, you have to understand the bond between a coach and a quarterback. The bond between Jared Goff and Sean McVay was severe. McVay clearly told ownership directly that he required an upgrade at quarterback for 2021. And no matter how cumbersome that might be from a cap perspective, Stan Kroenke understood the gravity of the situation, and the Rams began making expletory calls on Stafford and Aaron Rodgers and anyone else McVay deemed to be better suited to take the offense to higher ground and capitalize on what had become one of the league's premier defenses. In Philadelphia, at the very same time, the player the Eagles moved up to nab one spot after Jared Goff in 2016 was falling equally out of favor. He didn't lose his job in season to a young journeyman, but he did lose it to a very raw rookie second round pick from no one. Eagles included expected to play more than the occasional RPO in 2020. In Philly, it did get personal. Because of course it did. Between Wentz and head coach Doug Peterson. Wentz had been falling out of favor with the locker room as well. Unable to connect with a swath of players. Acting more in self-interest than what would be expected from a franchise quarterback and leader. Losing in adversity had brought out the worst in him. He didn't handle losing his spot to Jalen Hurts with Applem, and as reported here, within days of him losing his job, a plethora of general managers and executives were already predicting Wentz's rapid exodus from Philadelphia after the season, even as Eagles officials pleaded there was nothing to see here and Wentz's remain a key part of the organization. A divorce was looming. The league knew it. And it was always going to limit the field of suitors and the degree of compensation for a player with a growing injury history, a propensity for turnovers, and now years removed from the days of being mentioned as an MVP candidate. Things truly collapsed, you know, when sources kept saying that Wentz skipped out on exit meetings with Peterson. He did everything possible, passive aggressively, and otherwise, to make it clear he did not want to be part of whatever else was going on in Philadelphia. And even after Peterson was fired a week after the season, things between Carson Wentz and Doug Peterson continued to fester. And unlike, say, the Lions and Stafford, there is not harmony in the detachment between those two. Things were not simpatico, and there was a very limited trade market for Wentz. Super limited. Like, basically one team. The Colts. Frank Wright had worked wonders with Wentz back in Philly as an assistant coach there. They remained smitten with one another, and Coach GM Chris Baylor had let it be known far and wide that he was looking for a veteran potential franchise quarterback of his own, believing the rest of the roster was built to compete for a Lombardi trophy right now. You know, of course, it took the Colts losing out on Stafford for even the Wentz marriage to materialize. And that negotiation with Detroit went in the direction in terms of number of first round picks that Ballard simply would not or could not complete with. He wasn't unloading at least $50 million in salary as the Rams did with Jared Goff and wouldn't keep throwing first-round picks at the Lions to facilitate such a trade, which brought them back to Wentz, with the Chicago Bears hanging around, but never truly diving in as their only true competition. This always set up as an Eagles-Colts move, predicted here and in many other places back in December when Wentz was benched, and that's where it ended. Of course, with Stafford fetching such huge returns, it was always bound to further complicate this process, with the Eagles hoping to land at least one surefire first-round pick, but ultimately settling for a 2021 third and a 2022 second-rounder that would become a first-rounder should Wentz play 75% of the Colts snaps on offense this year, or at least play 70%. Injuries have been a problem, and Indianapolis reaches the postseason. You know, it wasn't a perfect solution for either team. But like the Rams-Lions trade, it makes perfect sense. under the less than ideal circumstances. The Colts needed something other than another one-year band-aid after Andrew Luck's shocking retirement. Wentz fits the scheme and knows the coach, like Phillip Rivers a year ago, and the price is right. They basically rent him now, year to year, at under, let's say, $25 million a season. Plenty affordable for a quality starting quarterback. If, in fact, Wentz returns to being a quality starting quarterback, which is very open to debate, the Eagles were always limited to one active suitor and could net a 1-3 for a player who had no future there, had become a problem on and off the field, and whose presence would set back their ability to move forward in harmony with a young and cheap quarterback, either Jalen Hurts or someone else. It's less than ideal to be stuck with to be stuck in that position for a player they had sunk so much money, time, draft capital, and other assets into. But that's where things stood as 2020 bled into 2021, and GM Howie Roseman made the best deal possibly, in my view, under that backdrop. You know, look, none of this means either the Colts or the Eagles will truly benefit in the end. If the Colts move on from Wentz in a few years, which is entirely possible, given the circumstances that landed us here in the first place, that's not a win. Philadelphia is clearly looking at a 2020. Philly is clearly, when I look at the Eagles are clearly looking at 2021 as a reset, eating an NFL record cap charge on Wentz as full proof of such, an ownership indicated as much at the press conference when Peterson was fired. For them, this is addition by subtraction. And if Wentz gets hurt again, they are looking. That's why John said this is addition by subtraction. Because if Wentz gets hurt again, they are looking at only a late third round pick and likely a mid second round pick for someone they thought would be there his entire career. You know, all I'm saying is this. It remains to be seen if any other quarterbacks will be granted a fresh start elsewhere in 2021. Either that's Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, Deshaun Watson. But if so, those transactions would be entirely different than these last two quarterback moves. The market for them will be almost boundless. There are no terrible contracts to be peddled as part of the exchange, and the limitations of desperation would not be present. But so far, very early, still in this offseason, desperation has been the rule. So guys, obviously, Carson Wentz never wanted anything part of the Eagles. Everything I just explained. That should give Eagles fans proof that the Eagles, they didn't want anything to, obviously the Eagles wanted everything to do with Carson Wentz, but Carson Wentz felt like, nah, this, you guys aren't the right place for me. It's like a cherry going on top of a freaking cake. A cherry doesn't go on the cake, it doesn't match. A cherry is usually like on a cupcake or ice cream. It doesn't go on a freaking round cake. That's why I see as the Carson Wentz and the Eagles. They don't match. So, all I'm saying is that just move on. And obviously the Eagles, they're gonna suck. No, there's no doubt about it. They're gonna suck. No. They are going to hit, they obviously the Eagles, they're going to hit that reset button and tear it all down. So, this is what happens, you know, and it's tough. Giants, when us Giants fans, we went through a lot. We went through a lot of tough desperations. When Odell left the Giants, I was desperate for him to come back. You know, I was desperate that we can, like, change it all back and keep Odell. But we couldn't keep him. Odell wasn't, you know why? Because Odell wasn't a perfect match. And I understand. It's tough. It's tough. Hope you guys like this podcast. I will be doing another one tomorrow. You guys have a good and relaxing afternoon.